Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.
Blake, what's the most disrespectful thing you've ever done to me?
I don't know if capturing a photo of your bare bottom is more disrespectful to you, me, or Steve Jobs.
Welcome to the Church Gear Podcast, where we pull the tech out of the booth and onto the stage to share the most outlandish stories and hidden wisdom from the tech trenches. And now, here are your hosts.
I'm your host, Blake Hodges, a man who definitely doesn't have a video of Toby mooning the whole company at the yearly retreat, and I'm here with my co-host who reminds me of the need to say allegedly to all of this, Toby Walters.
Allegedly? And what's weirder, me allegedly mooning all the men, adult men in our company, or you having photographic evidence of it on your phone?
Let's just say it's good that the photo albums don't tell you how many times I've looked at it and at what time of day.
This is just, I mean, our listeners are used to nonsense, but they're starting to think like Toby and Blake have really gone off the deep end.
What's crazy is that I should have went off the deep end when I saw that. I should have jumped out of the boat. What's crazy is that we haven't ever talked about this, and this happened basically a year ago at this point, but, and there wasn't all men. Sarah Day was on that boat.
Well,
thank you.
I knew she wasn't. I knew she wasn't within eyeshot.
Sure.
At least I knew that. So I'd like to say the most disrespectful thing you've ever done is replaced me with Ross in the opening stories for a couple episodes previously.
We literally had someone reach out on Spotify and was like, never do that again. And I agree with them. I got to have my Tobes.
No disrespect to Ross, but come on now. It's the Tobes.
Don't worry. He doesn't even listen to this.
And so, yeah, I'd like to point out that one of our listeners did write in to complain, which I really appreciate. I don't know who did it, but I love you, whoever you are. You're my new favorite. And if you're looking for a job in branding and marketing, there is an opportunity here at Church Gear.
They're also my favorite because they said you got to have Toby, but not having Blake would be worse. That was just the bee's knees.
See, that's just disappointing. I think you edited the comment before you sent it my way is what happened.
Remember that word allegedly?
Yeah, allegedly. And so you don't have kids, Blake.
That you know of.
That I know of. But kids can love you to the moon and back, or they can be wildly disrespectful. So the other day, Titus, my 11-year-old son, comes into Church Gear and just starts walking around like he owns the place. I mean, his dad owns the place, but he doesn't own anything. But he starts walking around, and I don't know where he's learned to, you know, say funny, rude things to people. I think
definitely
it's from
Shelly.
From Shelly, definitely.
She's a sinner.
So he's just sort of razzing on everybody at Church Gear. He says, like, something along the lines of, everybody at Church Gear is kind of a dork. But then he says, except for Ross. Ross is super cool. I'm like, what?
Yeah, Toby's kids love Ross because of the early service.
I know. Ross is like a celebrity around here. And excuse me, I also have videos sometimes on social media. Are Ross's just that much better than mine?
Yeah, and Ross betrayed me, so he's dead to me. So I don't care about Ross anymore.
Ross has been thrown under the bus here too.
I played a prank at the company, and he told everyone that prank could have went on for years.
That's true.
So
yeah,
he's fired.
That was fun. And you know, we've been to churches all over the country, and you've been to a lot of them on gear runs, and I've gotten to go on a lot of gear runs, and I've done church visits, and, you know, Church of the Highlands is one of my favorites to go visit. I got to...
I still want to see this giant warehouse they have.
It is gigantic. And it was just fun to... I had lunch with a large portion of the team, like really the video crew, but the... And we've had two Highlands or former Highlands guys on the podcast, Griff McCravey and Luke Vogel.
Oh, that's right.
And it's just kind of fun to pit them against each other as far as like who is the king of Highlands production.
We should just make this fight even dirtier, you know, just throw in a third person.
We should. And just, I mean, the lack of disrespect around there is also just palpable in that we, and I think we even asked both of them, like, who's the worst production guy ever at Highlands? And who did they say, Blake?
They said their boss, the greatest person at Church of the Highlands, without any doubts, Justin Firesheets. Justin, we are so glad you brought the fire to the pod.
And I'm glad that you are lying immensely about what people said about me. It makes me feel good. You know, they say the truth hurts, and the opposite is that you puffing my sails.
The lies makes heal. Me feel better the about lies myself. Heal.
So who's more likely to throw you under the bus? Would it be Griff or Luke?
Oh, Griffin, hands down.
Yeah.
That was without hesitation. Why Griffin instead of Luke?
Luke's just one of the nicest people ever. Griffin's still learning.
He is sly.
We'll just put it that way.
Griffin feels like a jokester, but Luke did exude niceness. I spilt water all over him at Philo 2023, and he was like, oh, it's all good. And I was like running to the bathroom for paper towels.
So now you've spilled water all over Luke Vogel. Drew has spilled it all over Adam Taylor.
Well, Drew's water was a spit.
Yeah. Justin's about to throw it all over Griff for throwing him under the bus.
That would be funny.
Yeah.
All right. So, Justin, you've got your five truths and a lie here. Do you think you're going to fool us? How confident are you?
I'm 37.6% convinced that I will fool you.
That sounds like a tech guy right there.
It is.
And I know we can't, you know, tell all the facts of this story, but he totally fooled you at Philo. That was a great practical joke that Firesheets pulled on you, Blake.
Yeah, if you see us in person, ask for that story.
Yeah.
All right, so number one, I'm listed in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Do they list the audio guys that, like, record the Hall of Fame moments? For real.
I don't know. You tell me.
Like, in football, if you win a Super Bowl, like, the marketing guys that are on the team, they get a ring.
Seriously?
So, yes. That's how I still have a shot at getting one. So,
and I mean, you and I both think like Firesheets is such a unique last name that I can't imagine there's somebody like another person named Justin Firesheets that's in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Wow. That would be fire.
Yeah.
Number two.
Sheets.
Oh. I visited 40 different states. Number three. I started college.
Plus, that does not mention the other states of confusion and disillusionment, angst, other states I've visited.
He didn't specify. So it could be all. And I mean, these could be states in other countries. Like Mexico has states, Russia has states, a lot of countries have states.
I didn't know that actually.
Yeah.
All right.
There's a lot of things you don't know.
Well,
that's like who was Ringo Starr or is. He's still alive, but.
Apparently he worked on Thomas the Train Engine.
Yeah.
Number three, I started college at 16.
It's like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. Yep.
Number four, I've never seen Avatar, The Godfather, or Gone with the Wind.
Well, Blake's never seen two out of those three.
I have seen Godfather, and I didn't think it was that good. Number five. I hold a master's degree in organizational leadership.
Hmm.
Number six, I was once fired from a job for poor handwriting.
So he's not a doctor.
They said, you're fired true. For all the bad writing on those sheets. So,
wow. That's your one
that
today.
That was good.
That was terrible.
That was so good. Your dad's going to text me about it, I bet.
That was like the most disrespectful thing to comedy in general that I've heard in a long time.
Wow. All right. I think I'm going to lock in here pretty early.
Okay.
I'm going to say that he has seen one of those three movies. Nope. Oh. I take it back.
Oh, my gosh.
Started college at 16. He did not.
Okay. My guess is that he does not hold a master's degree in organizational leadership.
Oh, poor guess. He definitely has one. All right, Justin, what's your lie?
Well, it depends. Like, are you guys supposed to agree and then there's one elaborative guess from the podcast?
We're trying to beat each other, man.
Yes.
I'm saying it wasn't college. And
he gets it wrong. He's fired. So this is a big moment for him.
You're going to fire me in
the
sheets.
All right. Well, unfortunately, Blake, you are the weakest link.
Ha ha ha.
What? So did Toby get it right?
Yeah, he did. Good
Dang
job,
it, Blake.
Justin,
I'm actually surprised. I didn't know that. I didn't think that. That seemed pretty. What? You don't think I'm smart enough to hold a master's degree? Is that what you're trying to
say? Well, you're either smart enough to start college at 16 or have a master's. So
wait, which one is the lie? The organizational leadership one, you don't have that?
Yeah, I do not have it. That's too much school, man.
I should have known
maybe
that.
Maybe someday.
Have we ever talked to a tech that had their master's degree? Most of them drop out after 1 year because they can get a job and they don't need to keep going to college.
Yeah, churches are begging them to work at like 19 years old.
Dang it.
Yeah.
How are you listed in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Long story. I was at a minor league baseball game. They had this promotion thing for the fewest fans at an actual official game, and they locked everybody out so that the official attendance would be zero. But everybody that was there outside the gates got to sign this big banner that said, "I was number one of zero at Nobody Night." That's what they called the promotion. And then they sent that banner to the Baseball Hall of Fame to memorialize the fact that it set the record for the fewest fans to ever attend a professional baseball game. Zero. So there you go. How about that?
That's fascinating. I mean, Blake, maybe we could submit you to the Podcast Hall of Fame for the fewest listeners.
Hey, listen, zero. We're in the top 10% of all podcasts, actually.
In the history of ever.
The history of right now? I don't know.
It's like us and Joe Rogan and Smartless.
Yep.
Like basically the top three.
Those people.
Yep.
All right. Tell us about getting fired from a job for poor handwriting.
So when I was in high school and college, I worked for a water park in the Atlanta area. I worked for 6 or 7 years and I worked in the cash office counting money that would come in from all of the restaurants and the merchandise store and the ticket booths and all that kind of stuff. And I was an assistant supervisor, and I would just try to get done with my stuff as quickly as I could so that I could relax the rest of my shift waiting for the money to come in at the end of the day.
That's what Toby does at Church Gear. He just relaxes as the money comes in.
And so I would, you know, I had to do a lot of transcribing numbers on these different sheets and everything because it wasn't computed or automated at the time. This is 25 years ago almost. And my supervisor, who was an elderly lady, got tired of trying to decipher my handwriting on you know, whether this was a 4 or a 5 or a 9 or a whatever else. And so she ended up telling me that I was fired because she was tired of dealing with my questionable handwriting. And then I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And then her boss ended up begging me to come back and paid me more money to do that because they were desperate for people. But ultimately, yeah, so I was fired for a bad handwriting.
So when the sheets were wrong, you got fired.
That's really where the name came from.
Uh-huh. You know? See, Blake, that's how you do a pun.
Yeah, right, because, hun. You know, in the olden days, people's names came from the job they had. Porter, shoemaker, baker, miller.
That's what I told Toby. Yes, that's why your name makes no sense. Like, that's also why Smith is the most common last name. Fascinating. I guess we all will have to wonder forever what your parents did to get that.
I think we need to keep a running counter, though, as far as how many puns we can make with fire sheets in this episode.
You know, I might have to get a sheet to write them all down.
If you do, you're fired.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Okay. Wow. Starting college at 16.
Yeah, that was a real thing. What do you want to hear? Stories behind?
Did you graduate high school before you started, or did you start doing like dual credit courses at 16?
No. I graduated high school at 16, and then immediately turned around and started college at 16, and then graduated at 20. So, yeah.
Were you smart, or were you homeschooled?
I was not homeschooled.
Okay.
So I was just. Fortunate that some things bounced my way, I guess, and was able to navigate through the system quicker than most, I guess.
He looks nervous, and that sounded ambiguous. So I feel like something illegal happened.
No, it's just like, I mean, what? You want me to sit here and pat myself on the back? That seems kind of, you know, self-gratifying. It's really not my flow, but.
It's a running theme on this podcast that all of our guests have accomplished way more at like age 20 by the time Blake's now at 30 and he's
45.
Still trying to catch up.
You know, I graduated high school at 19. So the fact that you graduated college at 20 is ridiculous.
So, Justin, I got,
of course, in Alabama, there's a much lower bar to graduate.
Oh, anything. They have school in Alabama?
Well, it's one room schoolhouses, you know, and so if you can make it through the alphabet and you can name how many national championships Bear Bryant had, then you're good to go. I mean, that's pretty much all you need in life down here.
Oh my gosh, so, that's really good.
I love that. Well, something there isn't a low bar for in Alabama, apparently, is church campus count. So I got the wonderful privilege of spending a day with your team down at Highlands. And are you guys at, what, like 27 campuses now?
24.
24.
Yeah, we're at 24, I believe, is what is kind of how we're communicating things at the moment. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, tell us a little bit about your role for a long time. I know you've transitioned positions, but were you essentially kind of global production director for all those campuses for a long time?
Yeah, essentially. So I came on staff in 2009 as the production director. And at the time, we had a broadcast campus and then three other satellite locations. One was in Birmingham, and then one was in Auburn, and then another one was in Tuscaloosa. And then over time, you know, we just continued growing and growing. There, we were very blessed to be part of a pretty amazing movement across the state, where there was a lot of hunger for what we were providing when it came to like a life-giving church experience. And so we were asked in a lot of cases, hey, can you bring a Highlands campus to our community? You know, we're driving, you know, miles and miles and hours to go attend a campus. And we really think there would be a lot of momentum if you were to bring something into this part of the state. And so we were able to really grow and flourish. And so for 12 years, I served as the production director. And over that time, you know, we grew into, I think, maybe 22 campuses or so in those 12 years until I transitioned into a different role on the team a little over 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago. And we've added a couple more campuses since. So, and then another one will come online in January of 2024. So it's been exciting, all the growth that we've been able to be a part of. And honestly, it's been really fun to be on the ground for all of that. You know, when you're there at opening day for a new campus and you see the excitement in the community and you hear the stories about, you know, people that have, you know, waited years for something like this to be in their part of the state, or, you know, we were driving, you know, 2 hours each way, you know, uphill in the snow, barefoot, you know, kind of a thing, you know, to go to a campus for years and years. And now it's finally here and we can't believe it. And our life was changed when we were going to a campus, and now that's in our community and other people get to experience the same thing. So it's really cool to hear all of those things. And it's really cool to be part of all that, because we'll never really know the real impact, you know, that we're having. You know, we're behind the scenes technical people, you know, we're buying gear and designing a workflow and handling, you know, the broadcast to the campuses. And so, you know, you're head down on all the gear and the systems and the stuff, you know, you're really not in the field to see a lot of the relational impact that things have. So, you know, so until heaven, we'll never really know exactly how many people have been impacted in what ways by the decisions we've made from a technology standpoint. But it's really cool to think about what that could potentially be like. And it's fun to be part of, honestly. It's fun to be part of any type of an organization that's growing and trying new things and getting to experience new things in different parts of the state. It's a lot of fun.
And Blake and I think both were surprised that you don't have a master's in organizational leadership, because it feels like over those 12 years, you've had to use leadership to organize a whole lot of stuff. Talk to us about like just learning for 12 years of how you expanded from three campuses when you started to 20 at that point. What kind of leadership skills does it take to communicate across all those people and campuses?
Well, when I started, I would, from a leadership standpoint, I was awful. I was at that time very much a hands-on person, very difficult for me to delegate or empower other people. I think a lot of people in our industry struggle or have struggled with some of the things that I really dealt with. Like, I can do it better than somebody else can, so why waste my time training you or showing you how to do it if you're not going to do it as well? And then I'm just going to have to come back behind you and fix it. You know, so why should we double our time? Or it was so very task and process focused, productivity focused, that I wasn't thinking, how do I replicate myself and teach other people how to do this? You know, so then I just become an overworked, stressed out bottleneck that has to do everything myself in order for the organization to run. was very focused on stuff, not focused on people skills at all, and ran into so many issues back. Like, honestly, I'm surprised I didn't get fired just because I was such an abomination, you know, when it came to people skills and working with other departments and navigating nuances of relationships. It was nothing I'd ever been trained at, and I'd never been in an environment that taught me how to do those things. And so for me, the value was always on productivity, get it done, prove that you're the man, show that you can do all these kinds of things. If you have to ask for help, it's a weakness. And so don't let people think that you're weak and you can't do this. Well, it did not take me long at Highlands before I realized that I would absolutely drown and could not survive if I stuck to my guns doing things that way. And I really learned kind of painfully that if I wanted to succeed in my job, I had no choice but to bring other people alongside me for the journey. I had to be able to ask for help. I had to be able to lean on other people's strengths that offset my weaknesses. I had to be okay asking for help and showing that I didn't know everything and I didn't understand things. I had to learn how to work well with other people and how to play nice and ask them questions and show that I wanted to be a collaborative partner in what they were trying to do. And I had to learn all of that on the job. And I was really encouraged and pushed, honestly, to do that by my boss, who, you know, to his credit, saw a lot more of my potential in me probably than I really saw in myself. And he really taught me a lot about, you know, even if it wasn't on you, you apologize, you own it, you take the first step to fix it. That's what a leader does. You make the adjustments in personality and communication style to see what other people want and need. That's what leaders do. You are flexible. You are going to change because otherwise you will not be successful in this. You have to learn how to do things differently than what your natural tendencies are. And so I really was able to embrace that as a challenge. And, you know, I'm a pretty competitive person. Like, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to figure out how to do it. And I did not like feeling like I had earned the reputation that I couldn't, you know, work with others, or I couldn't play nice with other people, or I didn't know how to do, certain organizational things or whatever. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to learn how to be a good leader. I'm going to learn how to work with other folks. I'm going to learn how to replicate myself. I'm going to learn how to set up boundaries. I'm going to learn how to say no the right way. I'm going to learn how to train other people just to show you that I do not have to have this negative stigma that you feel like you've attached to me. I'm better than that. I can be better than that. And I'm going to prove you wrong. And so that really kind of became some of my internal motivation for wanting to try to get better at how I did things over time. I wanted to be a successful leader, and that drove me to do things differently.
Blake, I feel like all of our listeners and you and I are slightly cringing because we know we all struggle with this, but also leaning in because, like, I need to learn how to do this.
You really do, Toby. Now, I'm perfect and don't have to delegate anything. But
how have you not gotten fired for being such a poor leader so far?
Because you haven't given me anyone that reports to me directly, not 100% of their hours.
I have given you plenty of people that partially report to you.
You've given me a fraction of everyone and a whole of no one. Oh, man. We've had a lot of positions here at Church Gear. It's a kind of a joke. You have three titles before you settle into your main one. And you've kind of done that a little bit. Wait a minute. Hang on. Am I getting off the outline here? Reliable leadership. Help me, Toby. I'm floundering. Oh, no. Dear God.
Do I need to come in and clean up your mistakes here again, Blake?
Man.
So, Justin, we want to kind of, get some thoughts from you. You've been there a long time, especially when it comes to church ministry. Like, it's usually a very revolving door. So how have you built up the trust and the reputation where you didn't get fired and now you're in, we're going to assume, a promotion where you're global project manager? And so we assume that's, you know, a kind of a step up into a bigger role. And so what advice do you give church techs to kind of build that trust with the leadership and be able to grow in their positions other than just getting frustrated and moving on to the next opportunity?
Yeah. Well, one of the key building blocks of trust is communication. You cannot trust someone that does not communicate with you, because, you know, there are things you don't know and you wonder and you ask questions and you doubt and you're hesitant and you're uncertain. In the same way, people are not going to trust me if I do not effectively communicate with them. That has had to be a big, for me, a big part of the leadership journey. Like, information is a way of empowering people, telling them what's going on, what the vision is, what the plan is. People will forgive you not having every answer to every problem and every question. Like, they get it. You're not perfect. You're not, you know, omniscient. You don't know everything. You can't predict the future. People are okay with me not having all the answers. What they're not okay with is me not sharing what information I do have. People don't like being kept in the dark about anything. And in order to really establish yourself at any level as a leader, you have to be willing to communicate as much as you can to people as much as possible. When you have information about, you know, events and deadlines, you know, communicate to people. Hey, this is what the expectation is. It might change, but I just want you to start thinking that this may happen, you know. Learning how to communicate up the ladder is a critical part of this, of, hey, I need help with this, or, hey, here's an update on what's going on. We may be encountering some choppy waters ahead, and we're going to need to start thinking through how to deal with this potential circumstance. When there's a two-way communication path, it makes it easier for people to open up, because they feel like you're being honest and open with them. And so they can reciprocate from that. You know, I feel that one of the things that helped me as a leader was getting as much information as possible into my team's hands as quickly as possible so that they could be resourced, so that they could be prepared. I didn't want them to feel like they were in the dark on anything. I wanted them to feel like they had the information they needed to plan and to do their jobs, because we all know how painful it is to get something last minute and then have to scramble, and how frustrating it is to feel like somebody could have given information sooner, but they didn't. And so I also, you know, had to embody what it was like to proactively go after information that I didn't have. You know, it's easy sometimes to want to be passive in this job, because then we can passively aggressively point the finger at somebody else. Well, they didn't tell us what they wanted. The event failed because they didn't communicate the expectations, or they never told me, or they never said this. Well, that's not what an effective leader does. They don't point fingers. They go looking for answers instead of waiting for answers to come to them. And so I would show our team, look, if there's information you need and you haven't gotten an answer, go look for it. Like, that's okay to do. That's what healthy organizations do. They don't sit around and wait on things to land in their lap. Let's go proactively figure out how to solve a problem. And I even tried to do that with my team. You know, I would ask them questions and painful answers, but what can I do to get better as a leader? You know, I don't want to assume that just because you're not giving me feedback means that everything's okay. What can I do to improve? What tools do you need to do your job better? How can the team get better? Where are the weak points? Where are things going well? What are the ways that you see us having room for improvement that maybe I don't see? And when you're willing to go looking for things like that, I think people reciprocate. And I think it earns trust, especially when you're able to take their feedback and then they see how you're able to act on that. You know, if my boss gives me feedback and I don't do anything with it, well, he's not going to trust that I'm really doing the things he needs me to do. But if he gives me feedback and I put that into practice and he sees it, okay, great. Justin's listening. He's learning. He's getting better. He's got a higher ceiling. He can do more. When the team I lead gives me feedback and then they see me putting that in practice, it makes it easier for them to think, wow, he's really listening. He really cares. He wants to get better. He wants the team to get better. It's not about, you know, his ego or his resume. He really wants people to be successful here. I can buy into that. I'm willing to follow that and listen to that kind of person. It's a two-way street, but it all hinges on how well we're communicating.
And I can totally attest to that. So at Church Gear, like, we have you know, a wide variety, and I love everybody that works here. But Blake, when I text you, like, how long does it usually take you to get back to me?
I've replied to you before you've even texted me.
And it's amazing how important communication is, if you want to grow in the organization. Like, that's probably my number one indicator whether I can trust somebody, is if they can communicate quickly and clearly and consistently, and not having me wondering as a leader of them whether they know that they heard me or whether
are doing their job.
I assume, Justin, that, you know, as a young tech, you probably struggled more with consistent communication than you do now. And what were some of the, like, very logistical things you had to learn to become a better communicator with those around you and your leaders?
You know, so I'm a very direct, cut to the chase kind of a guy, you know, and especially when I was first starting at Highlands, there was so much to do. It was very, you know, I'd get asked a question and I'm trying to just fire off answers as quickly as I can just to get stuff off my plate and move on because I'm busy. I hated going to meetings because that was 30 minutes of talking in circles around a 3-minute question and answer. You know, it's amazing how often sometimes people can stretch simple things to fill the time allotted for a meeting, right? And it's amazing how easy it is to go in circles about something. Yeah. And so I hated going to meetings. It's like, why can we not just send emails to each other and get this taken care of? Well, there was an issue. There was somebody in another department, a young lady, that had sent an email asking for information, and I just fired off a very quick, blunt, direct response. It was factually accurate. But what it was not was not very people friendly. And so she gave some feedback to my boss that, hey, you know, he's really rubbing me the wrong way by how he's communicating, and he's too blunt, and it comes, you know, he's rude and this and that. And so my boss set me down with that. And he said, listen, you've got to realize that part of your job leading a team is you are a PR agent for your team and for your department. And how well you communicate and work with other teams is going to have an impact on how much they want to work with you. It's going to impact their feelings about your department, whether they want to come back to you for help, or they feel like you're going to be helpful, or whether they have any interest in bringing you in the loop and asking you for feedback at any point down the road. You have to learn to adapt your communication style to the style of the people that you're communicating with. You have to learn other people instead of expecting them to always see things the way you do, because not everybody is a blunt, black and white tech person that's just trying to get things done. And so that made an impression on me about how important it was to slow down when you're having dialogue with people, invest in other people, ask questions about what's going on with them and their team and their department and what their challenges are. Hey, are you having a good day? How's your family doing? Do those type of things, because that's a way of showing value. It's a way of creating buy-in. And it's a way to help deepen the fact that you care about them and what they're trying to accomplish. And so I had to change my style, and I really had to put a lot of effort for several years into getting FaceTime with people that led other teams. Like, hey, tell me about what you guys are struggling with. What can I do to help make your job easier? What are some things that are working really well for you? Because I wanted them to see me as a partner that could help solve a problem. Not just somebody that they were, you know, dumping things on last minute for a service or event. You know, I wanted it to feel natural for them to want to communicate with me about what they had going on, because we always, as technicians, we always have feedback for how other areas can do things better. They can give us content better. They can communicate deadlines better. You know, they can be more appreciative of things, et cetera, right? But they're not going to do that naturally, because people inherently are selfish. They think about themselves and their team and what they're focused on and their goals and their deadlines and their timeframes. They're never going to think about me unless I put myself in front of them and give them a reason to think about me. But that reason can't be, hey, let me tell you all the things you're doing wrong and all the things I need from you. They're only going to think about me if I'm proving that I'm invested in their ministry or their area or their team as a partner. And so I had to get as much face time as possible with other people, just asking questions. What are you guys struggling with? Like, what can I do to help you? Because I knew that if I started the conversation that way, naturally that pendulum would swing back the other way. And then they would ask, well, so what's going on in your world? What are you busy with? What are your challenges? How can we help you with this particular event? That's what creates a partnership, but it has to start with me focusing on that other person, which again, as a task-focused technician, that was not something that I was naturally going to do. That was something I had to learn how to do. And I feel like it proved valuable over time.
Yeah, I know, especially this day and age, so much of our communication is digital. And so it's easy to fire off a quick email with two words. And there's no emotional intelligence in a two-word email. And sometimes that's fine. And sometimes the recipient of the email, that's fine for them. But there are also other recipients that will read a two-word email and think like, oh, are they upset with me? And so, yep. Blake, I love our Dave Roediger. I think he is one of the most emotionally intelligent tech people that I've ever met, which is why we send him out to love on all our church techs. But it's an invaluable skill. And I get it with, especially in a production world, the techs are thinking, I've got 17 million things to accomplish this week, and writing more than two-word email is not one of them. But I think it's so important to just have that emotional intelligence to build that trust and relationship with those people you work alongside. And sometimes it's writing a couple sentences like, hey, thanks for asking that. I think I can pull that off. Let me get back to you in a couple days, but I really want to make this happen for you. Like, that is an incredible difference than replying saying, I'm not sure I can do that. Those are two different worlds. Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We're talking a lot about, really developing yourself here. And Justin, you've clearly earned yourself a lot to advance as far as you have in your career. So what resources have you picked up along the way? And what would you point other people to kind of continuously develop in these areas?
Well, I'm a big reader. I like actual books. I'm not an e-books person. I'm like an analog guy.
Interesting.
Toby's the same way. Yeah.
I'm also not an auditory learner, so it's hard for me to learn through listening to things. So I don't get into, leadership podcasts and things like that. It's hard for me to stay focused with that. I have to see stuff in front of me. And so I try to read a lot, and historically I have, tried to find things. If I can read a book and pull out a nugget or something that I can really focus on, or I can teach with my team or share with somebody else, that's a win for me. And so I try to, as much as I can read, because that's a great way for me to learn. But it's not just reading leadership books. I like to read a lot, what's going on in the industry. I feel like it makes me better at my job when I understand that the way I do it isn't the only way to do it. There are plenty of other ways to do the things that I'm doing, and I need to be open-minded to how other people are solving similar problems. And so, that could be an industry magazine or a blog or an email newsletter, or it could be a manufacturer, a marketing blast about new, equipment that's on the market or something like that. But it's important for me to learn what's going on outside of my own bubble. There are more ways to do church than just the way we do it here. And I lean heavily on relationships, which again, as a very introverted, tech-focused person, was not a natural thing for me. But my first week on staff at an all-staff meeting, I heard our pastor say that he expected all of us on staff to know at least five people at other organizations that did our job better than we did, because we should always be learning from somebody else. And that scared the pants off me.
Because you couldn't find other people that were smarter than you? Because obviously not.
No, because I couldn't name five churches. I was so new to this industry. I came from a completely different world. And it's like, if he ever asks me what other churches are doing production better than Highlands, I don't know how to answer that question. And so it became a personal mission for me to try to build as many relationships as I could with people in the industry, because I knew there were other people out there that were doing multi-site better than we were, that were doing broadcasts and video system upgrades and whatever else better than we were. I just didn't know who those people were. But I knew that if my pastor was traveling and speaking at other churches and he had relationships with other people, at some point, he's also going to be bringing some ideas back from those other pastors and those other churches that he went. And it would, if anything, it would really benefit me to have an idea of what his buddies' churches are doing also. And so I started trying to learn, who are the people, who are the churches that our pastor is close with? How can I build relationships with people there? Because, you know, maybe they're doing something better than we are. And I can name drop that church when I'm trying to get credibility by bringing that idea to Highlands. I can say, oh, you know, our pastor is really close with, you know, Craig Rochelle at Life Church. Well, this is how Life Church does it. And so I think we need to consider doing that here. Well, that carries a lot more weight than me just saying on my own, I think we should do it this way, or Third Baptist Church of the Bumblefuzz does it this way. You know, like, it's somebody that he gives weight to. And so it benefits me to have a relationship with those kind of people. And so I forced myself to meet as many people as I could. If I went to a trade show or a conference, I was building relationships with the people that led the classes that I was attending. I was meeting manufacturers in their booths and building dialogue with them, people that I could stay in touch with. I got a hold of the Outreach magazine every year for years, did a 100 largest churches in America list and fastest growing churches. I made it a point to call or email every single church on that list and find who the production person was and build a relationship with them. Because I knew how important it was to learn from other people out there. It didn't matter whether they were a small church or big. We're the second largest church in America. That size does not indicate intelligence. Like, I can learn something from anybody, regardless of how big the ministry is. There are smaller churches that are doing things much more efficiently than we are because they have to think differently about how to use utilize their resources. I can learn from that. So I'm calling, you know, a church of 1,500 people, asking them questions about things, and they're dumbfounded. Like, why are you at, like, I should be asking you questions. Why are you calling me? Well, it's because I can learn from anybody. And I had to get in a position to train myself how to do that. Otherwise, as a tech person, I'm just going to work through my to-do list and go home and come back and do it again tomorrow. And I'm never going to meet anybody. I'm never going to learn. I'm never going to grow. I'm going to get really good at doing it the way I do it. But as soon as I have to shift gears and change, I'm going to be lost because I have no experience thinking outside my own ecosystem. I never wanted to be in that position. I never wanted my inexperience to limit the ability of our church's vision to grow and expand. You know, like, production technology is the tip of the spear of everything in ministry now. You have to have technology. I did not want our ministry's ability to grow to be limited based on my knowledge and ability. Like, I did not want to put myself in that situation. I knew I had to stay ahead of it. And the only way was to learn from what other people were doing.
Blake, you're going to have a hard time cutting up this episode into just a few clips for the wisdom drops. And Blake is not a big analog book guy. He listens to...
I listen to tons of books.
Yeah. But you know what the difference is, Blake, is there is fire in those sheets.
Toby, that's what they say. You say, wow, about your bedroom as well. So I don't know how much I believe that. You know, speaking of fires, I'd love to hear a disaster story. You know, all your years of production, you've got to tell us a moment where everything went wrong, everything melted down, and how you handled it. And you can't use Luke Vogel's one that went kind of viral, honestly, on all of our platforms about, who was it?
It was Stephen Furtick.
Yeah.
The Stephen Furtick experience where our PA and our front of house console
melted.
Do you have a photo of that?
That was an amazingly, colossally horrible, that's the typical train wreck that you can't divert your eyes from. You have to watch because of how amazingly terrible the moment is. Anyway, I really felt for Luke in that moment. but I was also glad in that moment that I was able to hide in the video booth, and it was like, well, nothing we can do. So, but Luke handled it, you know, as well as anybody could in that moment. That was just a colossal mess. Some of the ones that we have had, I think it was maybe our first year of doing what we call our Grow Conference, which is where we were bringing in other churches to kind of learn from what we were doing. You know, here's how we, you know, do small groups, and here's how we do this or whatever, you know, just we could kind of teach other people how to do that. And, you know, it really, the idea is, you know, we've, you know, maybe kind of figured some things out that are working for us. And so we want to share that with other people so they can maybe use that to get over the hump and whatever their ministry area is. And on like the opening night of that, one of our main IMAG projectors died. And unfortunately, the way the signal path worked at that particular time, because things had, we moved into our main auditorium building in 2007. And there was a lot that was value engineered. And so I come in 2009, and there were some things that were clunky. That was just, it's just the way it is. We just had to work around it. And the signal flow had the video output going from the switcher into the house right projector, and then it looped out of that projector to go to the house left projector. Hmm. And so, and the house right projector died, which meant that both projectors mm-hmm. went out. And so, you know, I'm scrambling trying to like bypass the cabling to get one projector back online. But it was a really embarrassing moment for our pastor having to say, like, this is the main opening session, having to talk about, well, you know, we brought you here to talk about how well we do things, and clearly we can't do projection, right? You know? You know, and he's making a joke about, you know, if you just close your right eye, then maybe you won't notice that one that's not working. And so we ended up having to work late that night to, you know, to get, it was like an input board or something that had gone bad. We had to scramble to try to get something in. We got it the next day. And during the opening session, you know, we're scrambling, trying to get it back working. And my boss, who at the time, who happens to be Pastor Chris, our senior pastor's older brother, is sitting on the he's sitting on the front row in the main session, and I'm texting him updates. Hey, I think we have this working now. We can get this projector online, but I'm going to have to disconnect the cabling, reconnect things, which means both projectors are going to go dark for a sec, and then I'm going to have I'm going to be able to bring them back up. He said, wait for my cue and I'll tell you when to do it. And so I'm waiting on this text, and Pastor Chris is talking in his session. I can hear him in the projector room talking about, you know, there's even a lot of stuff that we can do to get better. You know, we still, you know, have to get better at, you know, troubleshooting, you know, things like with this projector issue, and, you know, how we can get better at working through things like that. And what's our workaround? And so my boss is texting me, do it now. And so I'm like, you know, boom, boom, you know, I swap the cabling. And then I hear this roar of applause come from the main room as everybody cheers. Both projectors are back online. You know, it's this huge moment. And then Pastor Chris, you know, he looks up and he notices, and he goes, you know, he smiled, and he made some comment about, see, well, we're getting better already, you know, or something like that. Anyway, it was a fun moment. But I think it was actually later that year at Christmas time, that exact same projector literally caught on fire on December the 23rd during Christmas services. And we had Christmas Eve services the next day. We had three of them, and we had to get a card overnighted to a technician's house so that he could receive it priority overnight and then drive to the church so that we could swap out this issue, this part with the projector. The power, you know, the power module had literally caught on fire. And we had to swap it out on Christmas Eve morning to get things going up and running. So needless to say, we were really happy a few years after that when we were able to fully replace those projectors. That was a blessing.
Did that projector have like a nickname among the tech team?
If it did, I'm not sure I could repeat it on a family podcast.
Oh man, that
would you say that?
It sounds like, you know, the demon decided to just land in that projector and just keep messing things up. That's fascinating. Blake, it's time for a moment of embarrassment for you.
Well, then let me just, before we get there, wrap and say that on the disaster story, Justin, well done. Best recovery I've ever seen on these.
Yeah, that was good.
Thanks, man.
So we're going to do a little battle of wits, which should be hilarious because Justin started and finished college before you learned to tie your shoe, it sounds like. But we're going to go for something that you should be good at, Blake. We're going to talk about the last name Hodges. Because Church of the Highland, Chris Hodges is the senior pastor, and you're Blake Hodges. So we're going to do a little Hodges versus Hodges here.
You know Chris is my uncle, right?
He is not your uncle. So we just have a few Hodges-based trivia questions, and I want to see if Justin or Blake can get these the more correct answers. Okay?
Oh, man.
The more correct.
I'm on the hot seat here.
So
chances are my job is on the line with this, right? Yeah.
In 1942, the life expectancy for a Hodges was how many years old in 1942?
65. No, 55.
For a Hodges, I'm going to say 54 years old.
I said 55.
Okay, Justin was closer. It was only 30. Man, the Hodges were not doing well in the
40s. We got a lot of bad of the cancers.
Okay, how about in 2004? What was the life expectancy for a Hodges?
72.
65.
Oh, Justin was almost spot on, 73.
Where is this data coming from?
Okay, what was the most common occupation for a male Hodges 50 years ago?
50 years ago?
Bull pooper? Is that what you were about to say?
Yeah. You say 50 years ago?
Yeah.
I'm going to say bricklayer.
Okay. What do you think, Justin?
50 years ago? So that would be in the 70s?
No. Okay. I messed it up. It was 70 years ago.
Yeah. Bricklayer. So
late 40s, so early 50s.
In the 50s, a blacksmith or a smith of some sort.
It was actually a farmer, so neither one of
you. I was closest. I was close. I mean, you got
to
be a...
We'll give it to Justin. Why not?
This is bull crap.
Okay, so when Google...
That's what a Hodges would have said at work 70 years ago, right?
That's
being
what
a farmer.
This Hodges still says bull crap.
Listen,
for a living.
Bullcrapping is how my grandfather survived World War II, fun fact. The general said he was hilarious, so they had him drive a truck so he could entertain them at night and not die. During the day.
Okay. Next question. When you Google famous Hodges criminal, do you get either a Chris Hodges or a Blake Hodges?
Probably get a Blake Hodges. You know how many Blake Hodges there are? There's a ton. I graduated with a Blake Hodge and then 11 other Blakes.
What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. Let's go with Blake.
It's actually
Chris. He sounds pretty devious.
Chris Hodges was a character on Law & Order SVU as a criminal. So it's a little bit cheating, but that's who you get when you Google that.
Okay.
And finally, when you Google Blake Hodges versus Chris Hodges, whose sermon comes up higher in the Google search?
I mean, Chris Hodges. I don't have a sermon out there.
What do you think,
Yet.
Justin?
Yeah, I'd probably have to lean on PC on that one.
You're actually both wrong. Blake Hodges' sermon, and I'll have to pull it up later, comes up as the
what
top YouTube. Some pastor named Blake Hodges that has a sermon on YouTube.
This is ridiculous.
I know.
I don't even understand.
Well, clearly Justin won this game, but Blake, I almost feel like you might be the better Hodges here, whereas Chris Hodges apparently is a criminal, and you are a well-known pastor.
Yes, it's all finally coming out, y'all. I've been a pastor this whole time. It's been a long con.
Yep.
Justin, to get us back to some intelligence, I'd love to get a tech takeaway from you, although I feel like your whole episode is basically a tech takeaway, man. What is something you would tell a room full of church techs with all your wisdom and knowledge from these years that you've been procuring it from all the people you've talked to and all the experience you have?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
Whole
man, it'd
life
be hard
is
to...
being summed up in this moment, Justin.
Yeah, man, it's really hard to distill that down into just a couple things. Well, let's go with two things. First, I would say you have to be able to, manage yourself if you want to have the right to manage other people or have influence other people with other people. So I can't complain about other people not giving me things on time if I can't manage my own time and schedule and to-do list. I can't complain about people giving me too much to do and, you know, they're overworking me if I can't effectively manage myself with boundaries and priorities and learning how to say no. So I have to be able to model things before I have any right to expect other people to treat me in that way. You know, I've got to lead myself first, in essence. And then the second piece is, you know, you will only get as far in this industry or really in life as you can with relationships. You know, you cannot succeed on an island. You have to have other people that you can lean on for advice, support, guidance, help, encouragement, accountability, kicking you in the pants when you need help to get better at something. You will not succeed at all if you do not have people in your life to do that with. But on the flip side, you know, there's a spiritual mandate that we take what we know and we invest it in other people. You will not be considered successful in life unless you are taking what you know and you are investing that in other people. They don't have to be as good as you. You don't have to be an expert at anything. Just take what you know and hand it off to somebody else. That way, what you have been entrusted with can outlast you. And can go beyond whatever limitations you have. You know, other people can take what you've done and they can build off of it.
Toby, I'm trying to think what I'm going to pass along to other people for them to build off of.
I think your best advice would be hitch your wagon to a winner.
Yes. Named Chris Hodges. Oh, well, Justin, man, I appreciate you coming on. What plugs would you have? Anything you want to point people to or just...
Nah.
All right.
I'm a pretty non-pluggable kind of guy. So I don't I don't have a SoundCloud. I don't have a podcast. I don't have a thing. So
you have a MySpace?
I've got a GeoCities page that's great. I just put some new wallpaper on my MySpace page. If you're lucky, you could be one of my top 8 friends. So
yeah, he doesn't have anything to plug. His hairline is very strong. So, All right. Well, Justin, we appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for the invite. Thanks for all you guys do to support the industry.
Thanks for hanging out with us. We hope to see you back next week for more absurd stories, tech takeaways, and overall buffoonery here at the Church Gear Studios.
Blake, you want to know one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen? It's not your face. I knew you were going to say that.
My rear end.
It was the tour I got of the Highlands Warehouse. Like, that is an impressive operation.
You've talked about it so much, I'm really kind of getting peeved that I wasn't there, honestly.
I know. I feel like we should take a company field trip to see that warehouse. And surprisingly, it was full of gear. Can you imagine a church has a bunch of gear?
I feel like if a church had a bunch of gear, there's a high likelihood they're not using all of it, right?
I know. Maybe there's a solution that could help a church that has a bunch of gear they're not using anymore.
Yeah, maybe they should set it on fire, which is what they do if they leave it sitting idle. Instead, you should pull out a sheet and put all that gear on it, send it to us. Just go to our website, churchgear.com, and we'll make you an offer on it, and it'll be awesome. And then you'll get some money for your gear and clear it all out.
Blake, have you noticed any sort of a like running theme through these podcast notes on this document here?
Toby question has been popping up a lot.
I think if you can just sum it all up, this sheet says you're fired. 'Kay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.